In a world full of distractions, there is one big question on every dog owner's lips.
How do I become more than just the person holding the other end of the leash?
We all get dogs with a dream in mind, a vision of the future. And if right now your everyday reality isn't quite that picture you had in mind, you are in the right place.
It really doesn't have to be this way.
You absolutely can and will be more to your dog than just the person who gets in between them and the world.
The key is, you need to be more sexy.
More sexy than the neighbourhood cat.
More sexy than the jogger in the park.
More sexy than that half-eaten hamburger they just found on the floor.
And yes, even more sexy than the dog across the road.
I'm Tom.
And I'm Lauren.
Together we're Absolute Dogs.
And you're listening to the Sexier Than a Squirrel podcast.
Hello and welcome to Sexier Than a Squirrel, the podcast that teaches you how to beat the environment, how to be more attractive to your dog than anything that the environment can throw at you.
Now, we've heard people this week who've been sexier than deers, who've been sexier than horse poo.
Yeah.
You know what? We've even had someone who's been sexier than a chuck it thrower.
Yeah, it's been that big. Sexier than a squeaky toy.
There right? you go.
Like, insane. So, very exciting episode, guys. If you're joining us for the first time and you haven't heard about this free downloadable resource that we've put together for you to get you up to speed, you need to go and get that. All you've got to do is go to absolutedogs.me/start.
Now, you do really want that one because it's going to put you in the whole world that is Absolute Dogs and being sexier than a squirrel. It's going to actually make it all very, very tangible for you.
Yeah, and we've got in there some cool strategies, some cool games that you're going to want to play. So in summary, head on over there. That's absolutedogs.me/start. Now, if this isn't your first time hearing this podcast, we want to know, have you left a review for the podcast? Because that's really important. Our aim in creating this podcast is to make sure that no dog or owner is ever lost in a world where actually people are constantly telling you there's no hope, or you need to use punishment or intimidation or aversives on your dog. We know there's hope. You're listening to this, you know there's hope. You've seen the amazing real life results you can get. So leave a review for the podcast.
That means that so many other people are going to get to share and understand and appreciate their dogs and their world so much more. I mean, it's an exciting place to be.
So with that, what is the topic of today? Well, it's one that we've been asked a lot since we started the podcast.
It must be a million times over.
Yeah. And since we started the podcast, it's been one of the most requested topics, and that is socialization.
Now, socialization, when I think back, I don't know, maybe when I first started dog training, possibly now I'm thinking about 20-ish years ago, which is quite scary. Actually, socialization really was get your dog out everywhere with everyone, see everything. You had the list, right? Tom, you had the big and tick list.
Let us know if you have experienced one of these lists or been given one of these lists. And effectively, it's like a checklist where you have to, I don't know, you have to, your puppy or your dog has to meet 50 different breeds of dog.
All different ages, all different sizes, must meet everyone, at least 10 dogs per day.
And then 50 different types of human, including, and why, you know, I've never met this guy, but I'm looking forward to meeting him. The guy with the big beard, wearing the high-vis jacket.
With a backpack.
With the backpack, with the wizard's hat on and the witch's broom, right?
Big old beard.
I've never met him, but I constantly am in search of him because he must exist because he's on every one of these lists, right? And the thing is, it makes it like this full-time job to socialize your dog. But who's had that experience where actually you've done the socialization and actually your dog is more worried about the world because of it? Because
and
we've been there.
We remember, I mean, I remember very, very clearly actually with my Border Collie Fiji, that I did so much. I took her everywhere. I saw everyone. I did everything. And I really was textbook with it. Like, I was absolutely making sure I met all the people. I was absolutely taking her to all the places. I was putting her in the situation time and time and time and time and time again. And this is where it became a little bit, if we're honest, scary, right, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. And what we're going to be talking about today is actually how socialization in this traditional traditional definition and framework of you must meet 50 different people of different types and put your dog in the situation, how actually this can do the opposite of what is intended. And then what we're going to talk about is what you can do instead. Now, before we do, we have a game changer win.
Woo!
And the game changer win this week comes from Annie. And Annie is one of our amazing Training Academy students. She listens to the Sexier Than a Squirrel podcast. Hello, Annie. And she says, I was sexier than a deer charging out of the bushes and right past us this morning. Annie, that is impressive. That is super, super cool.
And not bad for a six-month-old collie. I mean, that's pretty impressive. Like a six-month-old pup, really. And yeah. So, yeah, we love to celebrate your wins. So if you have a win, make sure we know about it. We want to know about all of your wins. Yeah. What were you sexier than this week?
And the way that you can let us know your wins is by posting it on the Facebook page, letting us know on Instagram, whatever it might be. And let us know. We'll give you a shout out. And remember, if you haven't already, make sure you leave a review for the podcast. And within that review, you might say what you've been sexier than this week, right? So let's dive into really what it is that we want to share with you today. And that is that at the basis of all animal training, at the basis of all dog training, there is one fundamental key element. And that is that all animal behavior is guided by two things. And that is that they want to avoid pain. So they want to avoid feeling bad, whether that's scared, in pain, worried, frustrated, whatever it might be. They want to avoid that. And also what they want to do is they want to seek out pleasure. Now, in a very basic survival sense, seeking out pleasure might look like finding food, finding shelter, finding a mate, right? But
you see Tom's priorities here.
The key is that these two drivers of behavior are happening all the time. Avoid pain, seek out pleasure. Here is what is absolutely vital, and this is why socialization in the traditional sense goes so, so, so wrong. The desire and the drive to avoid pain far outweighs the desire to seek out pleasure. So what we mean by that is the desire to avoid fear, the desire to avoid something scary, far outweighs looking for any positive experience. So in a practical sense, that means that it makes total sense that sure, your dog has met, you know, maybe 100 dogs that they got on well with, but then they met that one dog that scared them because it barked in their face or it jumped on
them. Or even as simple as they saw a dog in the distance and they weren't sure what it was.
It was a big,
I don't know, let's say a black Labrador in the distance. Yeah. And it was enough.
Yeah. And that experience totally undid all of the great experiences that happened before it. So we want you instead to move away from thinking about socialization in the sense of a list and instead thinking of it a little bit like this, that one bad experience far outweighs 100 good ones.
And you know that even in day-to-day life, that, I don't know, you have someone that says something bad to you, it lasts way longer than all the people that say good things, right? Yeah. Like it's a normal response.
Yeah.
And so treat it as something that happens in the dog world equally the same. And so for me, this was like a revelation when we first started to talk it through and work it through and think about it. It was like of course, it makes complete sense. And it's something we see time and time again, and we've seen it in puppy classes, we've seen it in adult dog classes. Maybe you go to a training class, maybe you go to a socialization style puppy group, or and this is where we think we can make a huge difference, right, Tom?
Yeah, absolutely. And this isn't just based on science, this is actually based on some observations that we've had going through our dog training lives. And for sure, the first one that springs to mind for me is that I kind of did it the right way and then decided to do it the wrong way later on. So I remember growing up, I grew up on a sheep farm, and there were dogs around, and there were dogs that were involved in working on the farm, and then there were pet dogs as well. And there was no formal socialization that went on. There was no, like, purposeful exposing these dogs to the world. And yet I remember growing up when I was really, really young, the working German Shepherd on the farm that rarely ever had a lead on, let alone trained on a lead, let alone kind of walked around a town centre, could go to, could be put on a lead, go to the like nearest livestock market, behave absolutely impeccably and be totally cool with the world, and then would go home and then would go back to a week where actually they were doing their work around the farm and nothing else in between. And then for some reason, then we decided that actually, you know, the next dog that we got, we should think about doing this socialization that everybody talks about. So I was
still
very...
Especially when it's endorsed by like vets and people that are of influence, right?
And so we were, oh, there's a new way of doing things. And also I was still really young at the time. And so we did the whole socialization thing of meeting all the different dogs, of going to the puppy party, of
going to the park.
Going to the park, you know, meeting different people, making sure that different people fed your dog treats, right? And that dog didn't actually feel all that confident with the world. In fact, that dog became quite naughty but nice. They became quite reactive to other dogs, quite reactive to people.
And that was the experience that I for sure had with Fiji. That, I mean, she's eight, 9 years old now, and she did everything. We went everywhere. She saw everything. And at the same time, the thing that's interesting to note here is not everything was a good experience, and yet that was the intention.
Yeah.
So the intention was, yes, you're going to have great experiences, but actually sometimes when you, I don't know, visited a dog show and you kept taking her around the arena and around the rings and kept putting her into those experiences again and again and again and again, at some point something would go wrong.
Yeah.
Just through the sheer nature of the fact that you were doing it so many times. So there were so many repetitions that actually at some point something was going to go wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. If you keep putting yourself in that situation, at some point something will go wrong.
And I think the thing that made a difference, Tom, here for me was I kept 8-9 years ago, I kept putting them in the situation.
Yeah.
I kept putting them indirectly into the fire pit almost. I didn't see it as a fire pit at the time, but I would keep doing that, thinking I was helping the situation.
And that's it. And the human temptation, right, is when your dog has a bad experience with, say, another dog, you immediately think, oh my God, right, tomorrow I'm going out and I'm going to meet 10 dogs and they are going to have a great experience.
And actually, as an owner, it feels like a great answer, because as an owner, you feel like you're doing something.
Yeah.
So your trainer or your behaviorist or your regular teacher or your class trainer or your vet say to you, no, go out now and meet 10 more dogs because you've had one bad experience. Let's get you 10 good experiences. So you go out and meet 10 more dogs and you feel like you've got something to do and you feel like you've got an answer to it.
Yeah.
So actually people want an answer and they want to make progress. So this feels like the right thing to do.
Yeah. And yet what happens is we forget that one bad experience far outweighs 100 great ones. And in the process of trying to get up to the 10, 20 good experiences, you have another bad experience. And then it's like, no, I've got to start all over again. And therefore I go even stronger and expose them
and
to even more.
You get a bit desperate, right? Yeah. Like you're looking for it. I'm like, oh my God, Labrador in the distance. Go,
quick,
go, go.
Go find them. And the crazy thing is with that is that then people around you will also say, oh, you need to socialize that dog. They're antisocial, therefore you must socialize them. The fact is that you think about humans that you know don't feel all that comfortable socially. The worst thing you could do with them is plonk them in the middle of a party.
Take them to a novel party, leave them in the middle, plonk them there and say, yoo-hoo, get on with it.
Yeah. This is a good experience. And they're like, no, it is not. I am petrified. So what we're saying here is that actually exposure really isn't the way forward. Constant exposure, frequent exposure. It's not the way that we would be looking to and the way that we'd be looking to go. And actually, when your dog does have a bad experience, the worst thing we can do is keep exposing them again and again, because actually they've not recovered from the last bad experience before you're exposing them to the next dog.
What we're really looking to do is look for great opportunities for quality experiences over any quantity, and actually not ever training in that moment if we can help it.
Yeah.
If it can be avoided, actually we don't need to put them in that moment often.
Yeah. And so that's kind of the one side of the bad coin of socialization. But there's another side that's a little bit more positive, but maybe your dog did this pathway to where they are right now. And that is that you took your dog to the park, they met loads of dogs, we were socializing, everything was great. Your dog began to absolutely love other dogs and really value them.
And we equally see this at puppy parties. So for example, you start out with a puppy party and then you go to a socialization class and then you go to a junior adolescent class and then you go to maybe a young adolescent class. And suddenly you have a dog who doesn't just like other dogs and people. They absolutely seek them out.
Yeah.
I mean, they hunt them out. You're walking and suddenly your dog is gone like a bullet, and they're gone like a bullet in the other direction because they have seen another dog.
But the thing is that now the dog on the end of the lead is no longer a 6 kilogram puppy. They are, in fact, a 25, 30 kilogram dog. And so what we have to do is we have to stop letting them off lead. They can no longer meet every dog.
And it's not safe for them to be off lead. And we understand that because when they run away to go and meet another dog, that dog A might not like them. The owner B might be scared. The way that the law sits is that actually your dog doesn't really need to hurt someone for them to sit poorly in the eyes of the law, right? People just have to be scared or feel fear from the dog. So actually, you are sensible potentially not to have that dog off lead.
Absolutely. And then your dog sees other dogs while they're on lead, and they experience now a different emotion. And the emotion that they experience is where they think they have access to something. They anticipate access to something.
They've always had access to something and they loved having access to something.
And now they don't. And so the emotion that comes about is one of frustration.
Now, you know how you feel when you feel frustrated, right? Like, everybody understands the feeling of frustration. We've experienced it.
Yeah.
We know how that feels.
And it doesn't feel great, right? And so what happens is, when we're feeling negative emotions, whether we're a dog or a human, negative emotions start to spill into other negative emotions. So now frustration and that negative association that's developing when that dog sees another dog now switches into fear. And now you've ended up in exactly the same place as the dog that maybe had bad experience and then had repeated exposure and then had really bad experiences. You're in a place of a dog who experiences fear when they see another dog. Maybe they bark, maybe they lunge, maybe they get worried on the end of the lead, maybe they try and run away. Slightly different paths, but the same outcome. And it's all through this process of socialization. So I guess this leads on to, what should we want instead? What would be the ideal? What is the aim in developing and rearing a dog and training a dog?
I get it. I mean, we can hear you. You're there saying, absolutely, I understand all of that. But actually, if I don't do this, what do I do instead?
Yeah. And so for us, what we are really, really passionate about is quality over quantity as a pillar of our rearing of dogs. And what we mean by that is that they have much fewer experiences than other dogs might have that have been through traditional socialization processes. But actually, those experiences are great ones. And if they do have a bad experience, what we don't then do is go stronger on exposing them. We give them a break. We give them a time off.
I'm going to give you an example here. And this is something Tom and I haven't talked about previously, but I definitely can feel it's a good moment for it. So Tom and I were going out for a walk. It was I think it was towards the end of last year, and early morning walk. And we were taking Thistle, the dachshund. So miniature dachshund. She hadn't been out with my dogs at all. And we were going down to the bridle path. And I said, who are you bringing? And he said, yeah, I'm going to just quickly grab them. Let's go. And he brought out Thistle, the miniature dachshund. Now, while she hadn't met our dogs before, and she initially maybe looked around herself a little, and we popped her down, we walked a little. The exposure was quality. The exposure was minimum, maybe half an hour, 20 minutes of walk time, out and about on a bridle path and a track. All of the dogs were already preoccupied and busy. They were all enjoying themselves. They were having a great time.
There wasn't crazy excitement, right?
You didn't put her down until, I mean, she is a miniature dachshund, so we're talking like 3 kilos of dog. We didn't put her down on the ground until we'd kind of got to the point where we were going to let everybody gently off lead. So the exposure was calm, minimal, quality. She wasn't the center of attention, if that makes sense. No dog was going to just run up to her or pile in on her or say hi to her directly. She was just part of the party. And it was very much a non-event, I suppose.
So there are a few takeaways that we should really take from that. And the first one is that it's quality, not quantity. The second one is that if we're developing great relationships between, whether it's between two dogs or between a dog and a person, we have to decide what should that relationship look like. And for us, that relationship should look like one of calmness, one of, you know, we're almost cohabiting, we're not doing crazy play the whole time.
I think that was the biggest thing, Tom, that I took away from that, was it was non-event. Mm. So we deliberately set it up as a non-event. It wasn't like a big, this is what we're going to do, this is how it's going to work. There wasn't like, it was just low-key non-event training. And the most important thing, it wasn't that we just got them in the field and let them off together and stood there whilst they all ran around and played. It's very much non-event, even in the way that we walk and that we do it. And I think we do it very naturally without really thinking it through or planning it. But this might be something you need to go away and think through and plan. Like for us, it was something that we obviously wanted Little Thistle to get out with some of the other dogs that she will get to work with and meet. But at the same time, we didn't want it to be like a pressure experience. We didn't want it to be a tough experience. To be honest, we didn't even think hard on it.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a really like, this is a training session, right?
And I think that often what we see, people think that there's some kind of time limit on socialization. And the reality is that sure, there is a socialization period whereby dogs seem more accepting of new things happening.
But people get
period.
So het up on it, don't they, Tom? Yeah. I mean, they get so anxious that they've missed it, or they've lost it, or they haven't, or they stop doing anything because they've hit it.
Yeah. Yeah, and when you think then that you're working within a 2-week window, you're not going to make the best choices, right? You're going to go for quantity over quality, right? And yet when we think about this as this is a lifelong process whereby we're not socializing our dogs, we're actually getting them used to novelty, we're getting them used to events happening and teaching them that, you know what, events happen and they're non-events. When we take this approach, we can go much steadier on it because there's no time limit. And the fact is that, you know, for many breeds, let's take border collies, for example. Let's think about your typical farm border collie. For many, 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 many generations, they have been bred to be born in the place that represents the environment that they're going to live
for
the rest
of their whole life.
Their whole life. So they're born on a farm. They will then either stay on that farm or they will move to a different farm and be a working border collie. Now, that means that the socialization period hasn't been all that important in their history, right? Because we don't need a big, long, late socialization period, because where they're born is where they stay to some extent. So actually, often what we think is a socialization period of 8 to 10 weeks or 8 to 12 weeks, it might well be that the socialization period happened while your dog was at the breeder.
So let's say 5 to 8 weeks or 5 to 7 weeks. So actually, typically in border collies, this is something that we've for sure acknowledged, right?
And so really what we don't want you to feel when you get a new dog is that when you get a puppy, that there's some time limit 2-week window where you've got to go crazy on exposing them to things. That is really damaging to dogs. And even more than that, if you have an older dog and people are telling you you need to socialize them, being aware that, again, it's not a hasty process. It's about getting your dog used to events happening in the environment, not putting them in events.
So if we reframe this and we look at this as growing confidence in our dogs, then actually there's a whole new opportunity for you. You take away a hell of a lot of pressure for yourself. And actually we end up with confident rock stars, which we see as our game changer community, right? Like that for us is exactly what we're trying to grow. And there is no cutoff. There is no, you can't do any more here. You can't improve. This actually, when you're growing confidence and when you're growing it's just a different way of thinking. It's really a different way of thinking, and the 3-minute games that we play for sure can be tailored towards this if needed.
Absolutely. And then the cool thing is when we start to frame our understanding of how our dogs see the world as this sort of flip-flop between avoiding pain and seeking out pleasure, it really changes what we do, in that it's less about what we do and it's more about what we don't do. It's less about what we put our dogs in and it's more about what we avoid exposing our dogs to. So part of this is that we've got to be our dogs' guardians. We've got to be our dogs' protectors. And within that, we've got to know when to say no. When we see, I don't know, the children running up to our dogs and we're thinking, oh my God, my dog's not going to enjoy that experience.
Someone says, actually, I just love to give your dog a hug. I just want to come and give your dog a hug. We've got to look after our dog's interest and not only think about the person who actually sometimes it can be awkward to say no, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And in this respect, then socialization in that traditional sense becomes less about a process that we do and more about effectively guarding and protecting our dogs through this process that's a lifelong process and it's happening all the time. And it's only us that are going to guard our dogs from it.
And now don't take us in the wrong way here. We're not saying that there are no experiences that can be great for your dogs. And we don't want you to overthink it and get overcomplicated here. I suppose what we're saying is that you can start to think about these things. And sometimes saying no is the right thing. And don't feel bad about saying no. Most of the time, the reason we don't say no to something like, I don't know, can I do something with your dog, or can I stroke your dog, or can I pet your dog, or can I hug your dog, or can I give your dog a big kiss? Whatever it is, often the reason we don't say no is we feel socially awkward in saying no. So actually rehearsing responses. And I actively have a couple now where I will say, no, he's not friendly, or no, she's not friendly, or no, she won't enjoy that experience, or you know what, come up with your own, like tell us your own. We'd love to hear more of them, because I think it really does help people to be able to rehearse that and say that, because sometimes it's just a social pressure.
Yeah. When we reframe this whole concept of, you know, getting our dogs used to the world as actually we're teaching them that events happen and events are non-events, you know, something happens over there and it's cool to stay calm over here and ignore it, then that changes what we do. So effectively what we're saying is it could be as simple as you go about your day-to-day life with your dog. You keep some of their daily food allowance to one side, and every time a new event happens, every time something happens in the environment, you just actually deliver some of their daily food allowance to them.
So again, people get overworked up about how they might use their food or what they might do with their food. For me, something like using my dog's daily food allowance for actually not running over to say hello to the dog in the distance, or for just sitting with me loosely on a lead, or for choosing me over the squirrel. You know what? All of those things are worth reinforcing. So all I do is I keep back a bit of the gold pot, I suppose. And with that pot of gold, I use it towards things that effectively are disengaging from the environment. Yeah. So what I end up having is a dog who can disengage from the environment and can just re-engage with me, or just engage with me and stay engaged with me in the first place. And that for me is very, very empowering, because it means effectively we have an invisible leash and we don't actually need a leash at all, because the dog that I'm working with is normally pretty clued up with actually reinforcement happens in this great place, and I don't need to engage with those dogs in the distance, or I don't need to engage with a picnic on the floor, or there's no real value in it for them.
And you know, think about how we go through life. We go through life and we're aware of things in our environment, but we don't engage with all of those things, and so we need dogs to do the same.
Like let's say I was at a fair not that long ago. It was like a seasonal fair, and they had, I don't know, candy floss, and they had donuts, and they had all of these sugary goodies that would potentially be things you'd want to engage with. Now, you don't engage with all of them, right? There are a couple you might engage with, but you're not going to take all of them, right, Tom? Like you definitely have the ability to disengage.
Yeah, and that is what this process needs to look like. It needs to look like calm disengagement from events that are happening in the environment. And the way to train that is literally by using your dog's daily food allowance and giving them some when they see or hear, or even if not. You know, often we think we get a bit obsessed with, oh, did he see that? Should I reward it? How about something happened and they're probably aware of it, and whether they look at it or not, who cares? Deliver some daily food allowance. When in doubt, just deliver some daily food allowance.
It's their daily food allowance and they're going to have it anyway. So why not catch them doing? I remember a great, great mentor and coach of mine when I was learning to be a teacher at the time. And they said, catch them doing something right. And this was talking at the time about teenagers. I mean, it's a tough thing to do, catch them doing something right. But it's not dissimilar to working with a naughty but nice dog. You guys know that we love our naughty but nice dogs. We're very, very passionate about our naughty but nice dogs. And so for me, catching them doing something right is really crucial. And if you've got the daily food allowance and you're using it in that way, when you ditch the bowl, you ditch the routine, you guys are game changers. You know what those are about. I think that makes a huge difference.
So with that, what we're saying is take the pressure off, Have fun with it. Think about quality over quantity. This is not a full-time job. This is something that you and your dog are going through life together, and you're working on you both understanding that events happen around you. They're to respond calmly to, and we disengage from them. And with that, you actually don't need this whole socialization in the traditional context, and your dog is better for it. So that is all for today on Sexier Than a Squirrel. Remember, if you have not already downloaded your free resource, go to absolutedogs.me/start. Remember to leave a review as well, so that it gives everybody else context when they want to listen. And we'll see you next time. Remember,
stay sexy.
Hey, before you go, have you taken part in the worldwide Sexier Than a Squirrel Challenge?
It's a 25-day online video program. Huge energy, amazing community, and over 6,000 people are already taking part.
The only question is, you know where you are today, where do you want to be 25 days from now? Head to absolutedogs.me/sexy.